We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Arsenal Football Club prove yet again that they exist primarily to torment Tottenham Hotspur. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Alex Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yank and Gunner. That's right. With the Villa result at the weekend and both English clubs crashing out midweek, it is extremely unlikely that Tottenham Hotspur will be in the Champions League next season. So while we would like to win things, lift trophies and all that, you have to have priorities. And I respect Schadenfreude, and I respect hating rivals as a priority, and it appears that we have prioritized that. So kudos to Arsenal. We do have to discuss a disappointing night, a disappointing exit in the Champions League. I mean, we don't. We could talk about the weather or, you know, Apple Vision Pro or something. what do you want to talk about? No, we're going to talk about the Champions League exit. We'll talk about where our league season sits, how we rally from this, maybe what some of the shortcomings are. I would suggest that there is no time for self-pity right now. And I think a big theme of this pod will also be that we still have six very important games, and the club and the fans and the players need to take those six games on in that way. So we'll talk about that. Just a couple of quick notes. Firstly, if you're in the Chicago area, there will be a live podcast on Saturday as part of a thing called Goonerpalooza. There will be an event on Friday night with dancing and singing and karaoke. And if there's karaoke, you know you will find me there. And then on Saturday morning before the game, there'll be a live podcast with Paz and Tim from the erstwhile Arse to Mouse pod, Big Mike. And then watch the game and a little post-match revelry. So if you're in the Chicago area and you want to do that, you certainly can. And as a reminder, we are into the final week of the fundraiser. And so while everybody's mood is in the toilet, a good way to lift the mood is to do something great for humanity and for the kids in the Zaatari refugee camp. We will be picking the winner of the VIP Bournemouth box ticket thing next week. So final week to give. Anything you give right now is tripled. The 25,000 matching donation is live. The 150,000 matching donation is live. You give 5, you're giving 15. You give 20, you're giving 60. You give 324, you're giving 672. So, you know, that's the math. That is the math. I was told there'd be no maths. Anyway, so that's it. Enough of that. Let's get into, unfortunately, the football. And here to do that with me now is Clive. You can find him on Twitter at ClivePFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello, hello.
And as it is, you know, a unique occasion, I thought we should bring in a fresh-faced new voice in the Arsenal community to add a vibrant and dynamic bit of analysis that you may not be able to get anywhere else. His name is Andrew. You can find him on his own blog, which is called Arse Blog. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Elliot. How are you?
Good. I think the community will benefit from your unique perspective. And I'm just wondering if you're excited to finally share your thoughts about Arsenal with the world.
Yeah. It's something I've been looking forward to since whatever time I finished the Arsecast.
They're like London buses, these podcasts. Yeah. I just went from your 30 to your preview pod to the main pod. Now I know all the things I need to say. So I am completely ready to parrot all of your great ideas. So let's do this. I do like to start big picture. You know, I think it is hard after a big moment like this to just dive right into the lineup and tactics and analyze the game because we're just trying to cope with the emotion of it. So I will give you guest honors, Andrew. Have you had a chance to sort of contextualize what you think of this exit, you know, how you're taking it and just how it feels in terms of another season that at least at this moment is probably going to be characterized as, quote, petering out again, you know, which is becoming a bit of a theme. I don't think that's the case, and we'll come on to why I don't think that's the case in a bit. But how are you thinking about this in the context of the season?
Obviously disappointing, because I do agree with Mikel Arteta when he said he thought this team had the capacity and the capability to get through to the semifinal. The circumstances of the exit are obviously frustrating and painful, particularly I think the first leg, where we got ourselves into a very good position, gave away a couple of silly goals. Still think we should have had a penalty at the end of it, but that's a moot point, and it would have changed the complexion going into this game. Last night, I was okay with the first half, actually. I thought it was kind of just what you need for a European knockout tie. Second half is where it just didn't happen for Arsenal, and I guess there are many reasons for that. Big picture, if you want to do that, being back in the Champions League, going out at the quarterfinal stage, not a disgrace by any means. But I also think that over the course of these two legs, we haven't quite shown the Champions League what this team is capable of. And I think that will be a regret. And as I said, I think there are layers to that, which I'm sure you guys will come on to. But yeah, there you go. It's disappointing, and something we've got to learn from. Like all of the setbacks we've had in the last couple of years with all the progress, we have to learn from this in a big way as well.
Yeah, I think you hit on something that I really believe about this tie, which is we were probably 10% short of the self-belief we needed to get through it, because I think we had the quality to beat Bayern. I really do. And I think maybe a little through fatigue, but I think also a little bit through caution, we failed to show our personality. And it's funny, because Clive, you got on my case a little bit in Portugal when we were at the Porto game. You get on my case a lot when we watch football, because I watch football like a spider monkey. I'm jumping around and I'm just, leaping from here to there and everywhere, and my emotions are all over the place. But I did feel that, sometimes that line breaking pass was on, sometimes that more adventurous option was available, and we chose to be very cagey and very tactical. And I think we approached this tie in a similar way. And, if I want to be honest, at halftime of the second leg, I felt really good. I felt what we'd done, what we needed to, but you are going to need a goal to go through. And I do wonder if caution was overemphasized in the Champions League in general, and in particular in this leg. So do you regret that maybe we didn't show our full personality, our full capability, and maybe respected them and respected the competition even a little too much?
Well, I do think the football in this competition is different. I don't think it's the same game. And as fans, all we can do is we can overlay and extrapolate what we see in the league. We're sticking five past Burnley, Sheffield and West Ham, whatever it is. We're thinking, well, we haven't shown ourselves. That's natural. But we're not stupid. So why did we pass the way we passed? I think if you look at the two knockout ties, I actually thought the first half in the away leg at Bayern was our best half. I thought we did it exactly right. So we'd learned progressively, and we passed the game ball short. And I could see the players on the exterior thinking, give it to them. I'm asking why they're not giving it to them. I'm thinking, well, probably they want to keep our passing distances short. You know why? Because what is their strength? Transition. If you go longer, what are we risking? Transition. And so it's very difficult to sort of break away from what we see on a week-to-week basis, then go to this competition. I really feel strongly we are learning quick. What we didn't have on the day was offensive power and energy, right? So we are a team that's really quite energy based. So when we go, we do go with explosion, or we go with technical ability. And I think very similar to how we felt pre-Christmas when we were having a million shots against West Ham, but none of us really thought they were going in. I'm not saying we had a million shots in this game, but I feel when we fatigue, the thing I worry about is our ability to create big chances and take half chances. I think that's the feeling I have. And this morning, as I've been redesigning the team in my mind, that's the bit that I think we need to add when we get to the summer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I think energy is certainly a consideration. And just the lack of the energy we needed to be as effective as is required in the final third. But I also just think that elite top end attacking talent, I think when we get to sort of the back end of this pod, we can maybe talk about needing a little extra oomph in that area. It's interesting when you look around the Champions League, right? I mean, first of all, Manchester City are out, right? Treble holders, presumptive Premier League champions for the 13th consecutive season or whatever the hell it is. And they're out at this stage. You know, Bayern Munich, going out by a goal to Bayern Munich in and of itself is not exactly a disgrace. What I will say, though, that I don't believe, and let's discuss this just quickly, Andrew, and then we can get into the game and the bits and pieces. There is this tendency to say, and I have said it myself, okay, so I need to check my bias here, but like, you have to learn this competition. It takes time to understand it. Look how long it took City to win it under Pep. You know, it's a competition that requires experience. But on the flip side, I also kind of think you don't get to pick when it's there for you. You know what I mean? Tottenham Hotspur made a final. Atletico Madrid made a final. Porto won the Champions League. Like, there are teams that find their way to a final or to winning the Champions League that you wouldn't expect because it just sort of opens up for them and they take the opportunity. And I'm not saying that Bayern Munich is an easy tie and Real Madrid would not have been an easy semifinal and, you know, whoever it is, probably PSG would not have been an easy final. That's not my point. But Andrew, do you think that it's, you have to take seasons as they come. And the idea that this is something that you learn from and you progress. I mean, we made it to a Champions League final and then never made it past like the round of 16 for years. So is that a fair comment that you have to learn this competition, the experience will serve us well? Or do you feel that this is a missed opportunity that we really could have gone deeper this year?
Maybe. I mean, I do agree with Clive. It is a different game. Porto played a different game against us, and we learned between leg one and leg two against Porto. You know, knockout European games, you know, we dealt with them pretty well in the knockout stage because we had a lot of experience. I've got somebody at my door. Is that terrible?
No, hang on. We can do door music. On second thought, I have no door music. Why don't you just carry on with the answer? And this is another bit of evidence why your podcast is a superior production.
Yeah, like I was saying, I think we do have to learn, and you have to learn about how to deal with big knockout games, and the experience of those big knockout games, I think was evident in the two games we played against Porto and the two games we played against Bayern Munich. At the same time, it could be a missed opportunity because it was only a goal. Compared to some of the previous European exits, I mean, I guess you could argue that that's progress. Some small thing goes your way in the tie. If the referee points to the spot at the end of the first leg, maybe it's a different situation. But I there are young players in this team of varying degrees of age who haven't experienced this competition, who haven't experienced what it's like to deal with the pressure, to deal with the expectation, to deal with all the things that come with the Champions League. And even if over the years it's lost a little bit of its luster for the fans because of how essentially it has become a tournament for the biggest and the richest clubs, which it always was, but you made the example of Porto. That was a long time ago. You know, I think there are things that we can take from this season's European campaign and that we can apply next time around as well. And it's just sometimes a matter of understanding the game, as Clive might say, understanding the game that's in front of you and how it's developing. And, you know, there were some warning signs, I think, as we get into the discussion of the game. I think there were, in the second half, some warning signs from Bayern that maybe we didn't pay either enough attention to or we weren't quick enough to understand what was happening. And I'm talking about players running between lines, players arriving in our box from deep. And I think, you know, as we develop as a team, and hopefully in next season's Champions League, if those scenarios play out in front of us again, we'd be better able to cope.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think it's also going to be interesting because the Champions League format is changing and there will be a very different dynamic. And we don't know what the impact of that dynamic will be. Make it harder, make it easier. I mean, it's not going to make it easier, but you know, that will also change how this competition plays out. Let's get into the game itself, and then we can go bigger picture at the end and talk about where that leaves the rest of this campaign, because I still think there's quite a bit to fight for, and Mikel is going to have a lot of work on his hands, I think, to get the players to see it that way going into this weekend. But, Clive, we'll do the lineup quickly. I don't think it was all that surprising. Martinelli came in, which, again, I think is the right call, and we can discuss that a little bit. The big decisions he had to make, I think, were center forward, and Kai Havertz went back to center forward, and then left back, where he picked Tomiyasu. You know, and I think that had Tomiyasu been fitter earlier, we might have seen him take that position a few weeks earlier, and it might have become his own, even in the first leg. So any surprises there? Any thoughts on what he picked and sort of whether you think that's the right way to go?
When are you going to stop asking me lineup questions? You know I don't really.
You know
care.
I did time that wrong. I should have asked you some fluffy question, and then I could have asked Andrew about the lineup.
So basically, Tomiyasu, I think that's his best position for me, or maybe left centre back. I like him on the left side of the defence. I know he's a righty, but I just think he sees the game really well there. And I just watched the first half before you whipped me in here to do this podcast, and I was trying to see how he played. And what he did, and he was really good. And this is the difference between him and Kiefer last week. When we had the ball, he really did some cute things, standing behind Sané, making Sané look over his shoulder to see where he was, darting long, underlapping, going on the outside. So Sané was a little bit more focused on him, whereas Kiefer didn't quite have the confidence. What he did is he stood in the hole where Sané could see him and knew where his opponent was. And then Sané could then just focus on going forward. That's cute. You got to make your man think about you. Otherwise, you're going to be just playing the game that he wants to play. You know what I mean? And I thought that was really smart of him. I really like this player. I wish he was fitter. That's his first start in 2024, I believe. And there's a lot of chat today about rotation. Mate, if he was fitter, he would be rotating in, wouldn't he? Yeah, and that's the problem that we have. We really have to fix that problem, getting the healthy quality available. But I'm sure you're going to talk about rotations. I don't want to kill that, Elliot. Martinelli, where's your boy? I'm not going to argue with you on that one. To be honest, it didn't bother me if Jesus would have started. Jesus, when he came on, you tell me where he was playing, right? So everywhere. So I like to fix him off that left. We can do things. So, hey, yeah, I thought the team was good. And I wish we could have played Tomiyasu in the first leg. I think it might have been different the whole time.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think the Martinelli situation is one where he's somewhat culpable for the goal they score. I think there's a lot of culpability there spread out across a number of different people. But as a result, I think that influences how his performance is viewed. I thought he was bright in the first half. I think he's a little unlucky with how cleanly he catches the first time shot from the top of the box that goes straight at Neuer. I think he helped Tomiyasu through the game a lot as well, and his recovery runs to cover up on Sané were important. Tomiyasu, obviously, he had the one pretty ugly moment where he misjudges the flight of the ball, and he gets done with the long ball that goes over his head. First of all, it's a sensational crossfield pass, isn't it? But yeah, otherwise, I think he was mostly solid. So I don't really have a problem with the lineup, but the way the first half started to play out, Andrew, we had a lot of the ball. And we were sort of crab walking our way up the pitch a lot of times, you know, Saliba to Gabriel, to Gabriel to Saliba, Saliba to Gabriel, and to White to Gabriel to Saliba, so on and so forth, and kind of moving our way up. And I can't decide if, like, we did a good job to keep Bayern at bay that way, or if they were happy for us to do that and try to find chances to turn the game into what they did at the Emirates, which is quick transitions. Like, they didn't have a lot of attackers out there, but they had Musiala, they had Sané, they had Kane. They wanted to get the ball to those guys quickly and try to attack us in space. So, you know, did we control the first half well, or did we give Bayern the game they maybe wanted to play? I can't decide which way I think about it.
It's a little from column A, a little from column B. Yeah. Bayern said very clearly before the game they wanted to play a counter-attacking game, which is kind of remarkable. And I think you have to... You know, for all the frustration we might feel this morning, I think it says something about this team and the way it's perceived that Bayern decided that's the way they're going to play in a Champions League quarterfinal at home to a team that they have routinely scored 5 goals against every time we've played them at this stage of the competition. So it says something about the way Thomas Tuchel and Bayern perceived this Arsenal team. At the same time, it was cautious from Arsenal. We kept the ball. We didn't take risks, really. We didn't try too much in the way of vertical passing because we didn't want to give them the transitions. Bayern would drop back. And like you said, crab walk up the pitch is a really good way of putting it, because we would have it and we'd move towards the center circle and then we'd move towards the halfway line. Bayern didn't really engage.
No.
They just sort of ran to cover the spaces, to cut off the passing lanes, to make it difficult for us to get the ball to our wide players and to play those combinations. So I think it was a bit of both of those things, which is why, you know, I know Bayern had moments in that first half, but generally speaking, I was quite happy with the way we played in that first half, because you're not really going to be able to win it in the first 45 minutes, but you could definitely lose it, I think. You know, okay, you could win it. You could score three or four goals, of course. But I think by going hell for leather in the first half of a game like this, you leave yourself open to transitions from players like Sané, like Musiala, like Guerrero, like, you know, I think even Kimmich was really, really impressive yesterday as well. You know, if you go hell for leather and then you leave all this space in behind, they've got the quality to hurt you there. And then everyone will be talking about how naive and how stupid Arsenal were to do that. So, yeah, it was a controlled first half. I think neither team really wanted to give anything away. Bayern did have those couple of moments, but we got back and defended well. And I think the big discussion in this game is really about the second half and what we didn't or couldn't do more than the first, if that makes sense.
It's weird because we used possession almost as a way of defending in the first half, which is fair. And I think that's okay. Like, let's not get it twisted. This tie ended 3-2. The game at the Allianz ended 1-0. This was very fine margins. You know, an hour in, it still could have gone either way. It was very finely balanced. And so I understand wanting to play that way. At some point, you are going to have to win it, though. 0-0 doesn't get you through, and I don't think you'd want to go to penalties. So that is a difficult thing to balance. And, I just sort of wonder, Clive, a lot of our season has been built on set-piece goals and press recoveries leading to transition opportunities. Where I think we've maybe struggled a little bit is creating good scoring chances from open play against teams that have just a quality mid-block, right? Bayern are pretty press-resistant. I think they did a really good job not getting caught by our press. Neuer was a big part of that. Let's give him credit. Kimmich, huge part of that as well. And so I think that's something I just wanted to ask you about. Do you think that is an issue, that when a team can put a solid mid-block out there and doesn't crumble under the press, do we have a bit of a hard time figuring out how to solve that problem, other than just give it to Saka, he's doubled up, give it back to Saliba and Gabriel, give it to Martinelli, he's doubled up, and rinse and repeat?
Yeah, they're a team, they're mid-blocks, and they're mid-blocks, right? We face mid-blocks most week. But I think there's another aspect to this, which I think is starting to dawn on me. Because I've seen the Bayern game, I saw the Villa game, and what struck me, and Andrew, you was at the Bayern game, what struck me was their physicality. They were as big as us, weren't they? They were as strong as us, particularly in centre midfield. We did not win the battle in centre midfield in either Bayern game. When I mean battle, I don't mean how we looked on the ball. I mean managing the regains. I feel that's one of our major strengths, with Declan Rice coming in, Kai Havertz coming in, Odegaard's very smart, reading the drop of the ball. And from the drop of the ball, we create mini transitions of our own. Broken field play that we can then move into. I thought they managed that well against us. I thought Villa did as well. Had a couple of players in there that I thought were really strong in McGinn, particularly Morgan Rogers in there, very strong. And those regains, they have an impact to how you feel about where you stand, your position, and your on-the-ball confidence. And I think that's the thing that I feel we've really lost in this game. I found myself, and I'm not someone who looks backward, you know me, I always look forward. But I found myself wishing for a player of yesteryear to come into midfield to hold the ball and control the tempo and make sure they could get to a drop of the ball with a bit more youthful energy. You know, I found myself thinking of a Cesc Fabregas or an Aaron Ramsey there. I'd never do that, but I just felt we needed that. We needed that somebody just to bounce, boom, get it, take a bit of on-ball pressure away from Declan Rice and Odegaard, because we're rinsing them out, massively rinsing them out.
It's a little old, but Granit Xhaka is at Bayer Leverkusen, might be a player we could look at in the summer.
Again, I think there are things that you have to let that one go. There are things that he brings which are fantastic, but he also doesn't bring calm. He brings the other fire, the other stuff, you know. And we're trying to move this team on a little bit. Hey, look, well, I appreciate him too, but I think there's another way to go. And so, I do think we just have to pass this one and just remember where we're playing and who we're playing against. You mentioned the names there earlier: PSG, Man City, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. These are not small football institutions, and we just expect to roll through them. I really like what we've done, and I was speaking the other week on a podcast. I sort of said, I'm really looking forward to this period because we're going to find out what we haven't got. And you don't find out what you haven't got. You're playing once a week in the Premier League and you're rested and fresh. When you're playing every 3-4 days with the Champions League and the league, which we haven't done for a long time, we find out what we haven't got and what we need to do. And I'm really confident this club and this group of people that present this team to us are very quick learners, and I hope they're going to fix it off this game.
Yeah, and to your point, by the way, about, you know, how they played, Andrew, you talked about sort of the fact that they wanted to play this way and how unusual that is. Mikel said the same thing. His thoughts on the game, he said, obviously very sad and disappointed. But on the performance, he said, credit to the opponent as well. It's very difficult to break opponents down, especially when they play the manner that they play, which they never do, right? So him sort of saying that's not what they do. And then on whether he was surprised by their defensive display, no, because they were very similar at the Emirates and we expected that approach, but they believed that obviously it was the best way to beat us. Credit to them and congratulations to them for what they've done, because they've done it really well. And when there were little margins, they were slightly better than us, and that's why they are through. And I do think in these really finely poised ties, Andrew, that the moments make the game. They tend to be a couple of moments for you, or a couple of moments for them. And to Bayern's credit, they were extremely clinical across this tie in the moments that came to them. We don't give many away, but you know, sometimes a player is in on goal and they fluff their lines. And I think Bayern, by and large, were pretty critical. Are there any moments in the first half, before we get to the pivotal second half, that stood out to you where maybe we had a chance? I think was the Martinelli shot from the top of the box in the first half. That's one that I think comes to mind. You know, I think there were a few little half chances, but anything that really stands out to you as an important moment in the first half?
There was a Martin Odegaard shot, which deflected, and Neuer got a save on it. But beyond that, I think the first half for me was about things that didn't quite happen for Arsenal. Once we got into the final third, they did a very good job on Odegaard, particularly early on. They marked him out of the game. Could have been Limer who was on him. But I don't think there's anything you can really point to in the first half as like a missed opportunity for Arsenal, nor in the second, really. I think the story of the second half is just what Bayern were able to do and what we weren't able to do, particularly after they scored, when we put on Jesus, when we put on Trossard, which worked well last week, and it got us back into the game. It got us an equalizer. It just didn't happen this time around. And you know, I think that will probably be, for many people, the most disappointing thing, because it looks like there's no reaction. It looks like we're not capable, or it looks like they didn't try. And I don't believe that. I think they tried. I think the effort was there. I think the application was there. For me, it was really about, as Clive just said, what we don't have. And some of what we didn't have, we usually get from some of the players who are on the pitch, and they weren't able to produce. And I do think you have to look at this in the context of all the football that we've played in the last few weeks, who we brought off the bench, but maybe more importantly, who we didn't bring off the bench in this game. Because, you know, ideally, if those players aren't doing it in a game like this, which can happen, of course, for various reasons, you do turn to your bench and you look for game changers. And Trossard and Jesus, they helped us change the game last week. Mm. But I think with all due respect, you get very long odds on Eddie Nketiah coming off the bench and getting you a goal in a Champions League quarterfinal against Bayern Munich away from home. He's one goal in his last 23, 24 games. That's a story of this game as well. And that's part of how we built this squad and part of the reality that we have to deal with. But I don't, you know, I don't look at any particular moment beyond the Bayern goal, obviously, in that second half and think, oh, we nearly did it there, because I don't think that moment came.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's a combination of the players we depend on so much not really having it on this night, and then not having the game-changing performance off the bench. One thing I think we saw in this game, and we did in the Villa game as well, is when Mikel wants to bring on that extra attacker and sacrifices Jorginho and takes off that ball progressor from midfield, that hasn't worked for us. You know, that hasn't really worked. I actually think that's made us less effective. And that, I think, leads to maybe a quick Declan Rice conversation. I think some people have been a little critical of his performance. Worth noting, Declan Rice has played the second most Premier League minutes for us this season behind only William Saliba, and played 180 minutes for England, which was really, really important over the international break. Glad that that happened. So he's, you know, he's got a lot of minutes in his legs this season. He covers a lot of ground for us. He's very all action. This felt like a game where he was running around a lot, but that Bayern sort of had, I think, an understanding of how to manage his locations. And I don't know that he's necessarily the guy you want with the primary ball progressing responsibility when you're chasing the game late. So I don't think it was necessarily the night for him per se. But what do you think of that, Clive? The performance Rice gave, and maybe the need for that other ball progressor in midfield, whether it's Zinchenko, like it was to start the game against Villa, or Jorginho, like it was tonight, and what happens when we take that player out to our, you know, ability to get into dangerous areas?
Yeah, I'm not sure I am with this one. I think I just watched the first half. I thought Rice was okay. If I've got a critique of him, sometimes I think he carries the ball to the person he's going to pass it to. And I think sometimes I appreciate that in Europe a little bit, maybe, because he's trying to reduce the risk. But I think sometimes he's got a really good contact on the pass, trust himself. That will come. I'm sure that will come. I suppose for me, I've been really trying to study the opposition a lot more when I'm watching football matches. And if you just put a line straight down that pitch, right down the middle, Bayern told us about us. They had 14 fullbacks on our right side. And that basically tells you where our team is elite. And it's elite on that right-hand side. As you're thinking forward, we have to think about our left side. And our left side is not elite. It's as simple. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to do that. Right? So, and in those, a lot of those players were crushed by the extra attention. You know, and we could talk about health, fitness, tiredness, but they knew that's where we play. That's where our joy comes from. And we do have a tendency. Jorginho plays to the right. Rice is on the left, but he shapes to the right. Gabriel, even though he's left-footed, I don't think he shapes to the left that easily. He likes to shape to the right, and Saliba then distributes. And so, mate, that bloke you mentioned, Granit Xhaka, was the only guy we used to have. He used to fizz that ball to the left, you know, really fizz it. And we missed the left-sided ball progression. I think we need more quality on the left-hand side. Right, so that's the next phase of us, isn't it? You know, Andrew's mentioned Eddie Nketiah, and where we are in our squad evolution, Eddie has a role in this phase. I'm not sure, and it's not just Eddie, by the way, I'm not sure if he has a role in the next phase. And that's fine, isn't it? If we want to come here again to Munich, if we want to play at this level, then we need to up the level, don't we? And that's it. And it's a big discovery here. It's quick. I've gone through the grief and in solution mode. And so, yeah, Rice is what he is, Elliot. How we partner him is one of the questions, isn't it? Yeah. I haven't got the answer, mate. I haven't got it.
Declan Rice is the answer. It's just, what's the answer to the dynamic in midfield? And I think, Andrew, in this tie and in this game, and maybe in this week between Villa and Bayern, you see a little bit of where the squad building hasn't worked and where it needs to be corrected a bit. When we started this season, Kai Havertz was eight. He was the left eight. Mikel has said it. You want to believe what he said or didn't said? That's what he started. He started with Kai Havertz at left eight, and the midfield was going to be, you know, some version of Rice with Odegaard, with Kai. You think about how we really started with Gabriel on the bench and Thomas Partey at right back. I mean, Zinchenko at left back. You talk about ball progression, right? And you get Zinchenko on one side, Partey on the other, Rice through the middle. But whatever the dynamic was expected to be, if you think about it, Andrew, we have Declan Rice, who is able to play eight. We've seen that, but he's a six. And you have Odegaard, who is an eight. I don't think he's a 10. I think he's an eight, but he's a great one. And then our options are like Kai, Smith Rowe, Fabio Vieira, Jorginho. I don't think going into this season, Mikel would have said, when I get to the real critical stage of the season, I'm going to be using Jorginho every 3 days as one of my midfielders. Not able to pick Partey, not trusting Smith Rowe, not trusting Fabio Vieira, not using Kai at eight because he's become my nine. I don't think that's the plan. So do you think when you look at where we are right now, that's a clear area where how we built and how we planned maybe hasn't come to fruition the way we needed to, and some things need to move around and be shuffled around to get the midfield, that extra piece into the midfield that's maybe not there right now the way we need it?
Yeah, I mean, it was so funny last season. The left eight discussion was one that went on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's here again.
It was so much fun. Let's do it again. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it again. Who's it going to be? I mean, I do think that if in a game like this, you know, Smith Rowe can't get off the bench, Fabio Vieira can't get off the bench, Thomas Partey can't get off the bench or isn't trusted to get off the bench, none of those players, then that tells you quite a bit about what the manager is thinking about, you know, what these guys can contribute in a game like this.
Mm.
There'll be talk of a center forward. So if you bring in a center forward, where does that leave Havertz? Does that push him back into the eight? Is he really the guy to be that? I think the point about the left-hand side is very, very interesting because, you know, on your podcast and you know, when you read things and when you talk to people, you know, what is the thing you hear over and over again about the right-hand side? It's like a triangle between White, Odegaard, and Saka, and how effective that is and the movement and the combinations that they can produce in that side of the pitch, which make us a really, as Clive said, elite, or that's an elite part of our team going forward. Martinelli's role is different, obviously. And last night he was very diligent, helped Tomiyasu in a big, big way. But when the ball gets to him in those wide areas, he doesn't have those combinations. He doesn't really have the same relationships with the players around him that the players on our right-hand side do.
Mm.
And that's something Arteta talks about all the time, is the relationships between players and how they come to know each other and how they come to work together in tight areas and things like that. With Martinelli, it's kind of right, give him the ball, see can he skin the guy on the outside. If he can't skin the guy on the outside, step back inside. Maybe it opens up for a shot, as it did for him at one point in the first half where he curled it wide, I think quite early on. Or he plays the ball back to Gabriel, we recycle, we go over to the right-hand side, or he plays sometimes, depending on how the opposition are set up, he can play a square ball into midfield to Rice, to Jorginho, somebody like that, and maybe we start again higher up the pitch. So I think this is going to be a big talking point during the summer. I think it's going to be a big part of how we set up, and maybe it's not going to be, I don't know, maybe the structure changes. Maybe you don't play with that mythical left eight. Maybe you do something a little bit different and you bring in a sort of a pass machine to sit alongside Declan Rice, somebody with a bit more legs than Jorginho, somebody with a bit more zip than Jorginho, who I like and I think on the ball brings a lot to the team, but you know, yesterday was kind of crying out for somebody who could just cover an extra 5 or 10 yards in midfield to nick a ball, to play it forward as the opposition were still turning around, and then we have the ability to go towards their box and hurt them. And I think, you know, when we're talking about and thinking about how the team moves on and progresses, that seems a really obvious one to me.
Yeah, look, I agree with that. I also think the players have to take responsibility on themselves to up their level as well. You know, Mikel has set up a system that is works the way it works. And it's easy sometimes when you've lost to say, well, it's not working. I mean, we're one goal away from being in a semifinal of the Champions League. We're on pace for our second mid-80s point 65 goal difference season in the Premier League. We're very, very, very good. And I think there is a real danger, because we want more, to think that there's a guarantee you get there. There's no guarantee you get to 90 points. We've done it once in our club's history, right? Or at least in Premier League history. There's no guarantee you get to a Champions League final. We've also done that once in our club's history. Both those things are things we're going to want to rectify, and I think we can. But we're now into the finest of fine margins. Going from eighth to fourth isn't hard. Hell, going from eighth to second is something you can do. But going from 84-point seasons to 90-point seasons, that difference is a chasm. And there's no guarantee you cross it. And it's very, very easy to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, sometimes, and Billy Carpenter said this, I think, in one of his articles, it becomes about stacking unicorns. I think maybe it's just as simple as we need another or a couple more elite attacking players who can break a game. If Alexis Sanchez, prime Alexis Sanchez, is in this team, if prime Robin Van Persie, if Pires, if Bergkamp, if Henri is in this team, just one of them, do you think we get through this tie? I think we do. I think you need one more game winner, one more match winner, one person who can just leather it from 25 yards out and win you a tie with a moment of individual brilliance, trick their way past three guys and slide it into an open position for a tap in, or, you know, Trossard's case to find the keeper's foot. I'm kidding. So you can get into all the fancy tactics, but at this level, the tactics are so good, the players are so good. Sometimes individuals have to solve it. You know what I mean, Andrew? Like, I think...
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what myself and James spoke about a little bit on the Arscast Extra today. Like, it felt like this was a game where we needed some individualism because the collective structure wasn't quite doing what we needed it to do. And I don't know that we have that player in the squad at this moment in time. I think we've got some great players. I think they're all capable of fantastic things in the right circumstances. But... you know, this is where, maybe Clive has some thoughts on this, you know, is where I think maybe Arteta needs to bend his principles just a little bit, because, you know, we are where we are and we've got to where we are because of the collective, the teamwork, the strategy, the tactics. And I think all of those things are fantastic. I'm not saying throw them away by any means, but I also think that the very best teams can do that, but also bring with them or bring on board a player who has something outside of that, because those are the things. Arteta even said it in the build-up to this game. You need magic moments. You need we have to create a magic moment. I think he was talking again a bit about the collective, that we as a team have to, I don't know, make 25 passes and the perfect triangle at 36 degrees, 28 degrees, and whatever degree has to come off to send Ben White in behind to put a ball in, and then someone slots it. You know, that's kind of the magic moment I think he's thinking of. I think what you just said about a player who can put one in the top corner from 30 yards, or who can beat a couple of men, or who can burn the fullbacks and make the final ball, I think that certainly is something that we as a team do not have and could do with.
Yeah, I mean, the entire Porto tie came down to one unbelievable moment of quality from Odegaard and one excellent finish from Trossard. That was all we created, and that was enough to get through. Look at our season. We were really worried by the first half of our season. What's wrong? Are the players not as good as we thought? Everybody knows the data. We're underperforming XG. What's changed in the second half of the season? I don't think we got that much better. You know what's really changed in the second half of the season? We started finding the back of the net. The players that we needed to find the back of the net started finding the back of the net. If your attacking players take their chances, you tend to feel like you're a very good team. I think we could use just that one extra bit of brilliance in that area of the pitch. Bukayo Saka carries so much of the burden, Clive. And I think you see that not just in him carrying a knock and how much football he has to play, but just the incredible pressure of being the guy who's got to win these games. We need another player at that level, you know, of quality in the decisive end of the pitch, I think, is what's going to change this for us at this point.
Yeah, they knew he was the guy, so they stopped him, and that's it. And very, very simple. So, you know, they said, if you're going to beat us, you're going to have to beat us with your left-hand side. And we were. We weren't able to. So, and that's fine. I think there are many things we can do. I don't want to go into a full solution mode, but there are many things we can do. You know, we have Urien Timber to come back in to offer us some ball progression from the left, potentially some from the right. The way he gets, you know, brings the ball forward, whether with a carry or a pass, we could do with that without losing some physicality defensively. Me and Andrew are talking sort of separately around a different style of fullback, maybe an attacking fullback, an overlapping fullback on the left-hand side, which I think this squad could do with rather than an inverted fullback, because we've got those aplenty. So have someone that really flies down the outside. That may change Martinelli's life, create a relationship on that side of the pitch. Do you see? And that's how you redesign things. There are discussions today that I'm having with some people online around moving Martin Odegaard back to play next to Declan Rice. And people have been saying this to me for a long time. I've been arguing with them. I see today I'm looking at it thinking, you know what? We need more goal-scoring power. Why has Odegaard got to be part of our build-up and our lead presser? That's not sustainable for his mid-20s. But he's outstanding at manipulating the ball, building up. His passing range is, you know, superb, right? So could we have him at the base of our team a little bit more, providing that role? And that opens up a whole new redesign of our front line, what our number 10 looks like. Could he be more powerful? Could he be a scorer first? You know, then you suddenly have distractions for Saka, scoring distractions, not creative distractions, scoring distractions. And so the team is ready for a slight redesign. But this is good, isn't it? We weren't saying this a month ago and we're sitting top scorers of the league, but you only find this stuff out against the very, very, very best. The very best teams. And we've got to accept we're due an offensive redesign, aren't we? We are. And to get to the next level, and some of that's personnel, some of that's systemic. And this is what makes this summer, given to what Arteta's bought, Elliot, you probably know better than me, a lot of money in defenders. He's got his midfield player in. He's a midfield partner, and he needs to redesign that forward line. You know, and this is where the money is going to go this year. Absolutely.
Let's be honest. Mikel has taken us from nowhere to the top table of domestic and European football, building from the back, giving us structure, giving us solidity, giving us control. It's time for him to give us explosion at the top end of the pitch. We're going to need that to go the next level. Because the thing that happens at this level, you guys, look, when you're playing Sheffield United, your talent's enough to beat them. When you're playing Manchester United, your tactics are enough to beat them because they're so shit tactically, right? But when you're playing Bayern Munich in the quarterfinal of the Champions League, their talent and their tactics are excellent too. And so the margins are really fine and someone's got to break the game. I mean, I know we're going to talk in a moment about the goal we conceded and all the errors on it. But that is a stunning header, you know, arriving late, a brilliant run to spot the space to head that in. Like, it takes a moment of real quality too. Sané gets past Martinelli. The cross comes over, the cross into the corridor of uncertainty or an area of uncertainty and Kimmich arrives. It's just really well executed. So you need those game breakers. Let's get ready to shift to the second half, their goal and maybe just a look ahead to what's left for us this season. Cause I think we have to believe that there's still a lot left for us, but I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't delight Andrew with an ad read. So let's do that. Patrons it will be as if it never happened. That's a reminder that you can sign up for Patreon and it will be as if it never happened. We'll also have an episode of the recap, debut episode of the recap tomorrow. Okay.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So, whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like Andrew, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Arsenal Vision Podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. The technology promotes wellness, relaxation, purification, rejuvenation. In fact, you can go on their website, by the way. There's a PhD doctor who describes the system and the thought process behind it. You can read up and get more information on that. But whether you're here in the US or hundreds of other locations around the globe, access is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/arsenalvision. To learn more and find a center near you, that's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/arsenalvision. Do it now. And here's where I really shine. No material testimonials in the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding medical condition or treatment. And before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System. Clive, is that enough of that?
Indeed.
Got it. Andrew, that's professional disclaimer reading right there.
Yeah, I'm very impressed, actually. I have to say, voiceover guy, you got that in one take. It was brilliant.
Yeah, you know, when you go to law school, the first thing they do is teach you how to read disclaimers. Okay.
Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, terms and conditions apply to our second half performance, though, Andrew. And it wasn't good. And it's a second half performance that I think wasn't good. We've come out of halftime. The opposition has adjusted. I think it's probably similar to the Villa game, overstated how poor we were coming out of the second half. Out of halftime. I think it was the second half of the second halves in both cases that were really poor. But before they scored their goal, you know, I hate the timing of when their goal came, because I think as the game got late, the pressure was going to increasingly swing to them, you know, on their home pitch to do what they need to do. And, you know, you saw it with the Barcelona game. Granted, they were down to 10 men. You saw it with the Manchester City game. And again, admittedly, that went to penalties. But we just didn't push it late enough. What do you think changed that you could spot in the second half, at least before they scored their goal, if anything, that might have been turning the tie?
I think they were a bit more front-footed, a bit more aggressive. They started the second half really well with that header that hit the bar. Then they hit the post. They put us under pressure. They had a lot of corners. They caused uncertainty in our defense that wasn't there in the first half, really. Gabriel and Raya, again, nearly a mix-up where Gabriel played the ball back and Raya come to claim and it's a corner. So I think that might have just unsettled us a little bit. It might have just put us on the back foot and put them on the front foot in a game of tight margins, a game that was pretty cautious. I don't think it ever really properly opened up, but Bayern made the game and made the pitch a bit bigger than it was previously for the goal, because they burst through the lines. That ability that Musiala showed in the first half, for example, it was Leimer who got the ball beyond Odegaard in midfield, played it out to Kimmich, to Sané, that cross, the cross back in, the header. You know, it was just one of the few times we ended up being really quite stretched. And that was just, you know, from making progress between the lines. I suppose you can always look at every goal and say, well, we should do better there. Could Tomiyasu have been a bit more on his toes? Could Martinelli have been more aware? Yes, he could, but he just chased back 60, 70 yards or whatever it was with Sané. And he's not really a defender. He's in our box in that position. It is a good delivery. I think he stands it up very well. Kimmich attacks it really well. Don't think the keeper has any chance. But, you know, that can happen. I think the thing is about the reaction that we got or didn't get from Arsenal after they scored.
Yeah, we didn't get it, did we? that's really it. Do you want to go through the goal quickly, Clive? I mean, just to put it in perspective, by the way, it was 6-4 on shots in the first half and pretty even on XG. We had 6, they had 4. We were outshot 11-2 in the second half. 2 Martin Odegaard off-target shots. You know, we got sort of properly blown away, I think, in the second half. Unfortunately, the goal did lead to a lot of that, and we can come on to that. But for the goal itself, it's got a lot of There are a lot of chefs involved in that one because Martinelli gets beat by Sané to the byline. When the cross goes over, I don't think Raya reacts to it well. He's not really sure what to do. He scrambles but doesn't do anything to it. White doesn't close down the return cross. Martinelli has lost Kimmich trying to recover his position. Tomiyasu is unaware of what's going on. That's how I saw it. How did you see it?
This is Andrew. Just like that. We can move on. This is what he normally does to me. He asks me a question and then answers it in detail and then says, well, that's how I saw it. What are you going to do with that one then, mate? You know what I mean? So like, yeah.
I've teed you up to say whatever you want. There you go.
So let's go into trends then, right? So when the goalkeeper flapped at that, I thought about Spurs at home. You slowed down the cross, mate. Just, you know, what are you doing? You slowed it down, let it go further out. And also, we've had a couple of examples in the last week around second phases around the box. We're not aggressive enough to either close down the cross. We're not attentive enough to track runners into our box. Hey, look at the Villa game. It's not far away, is it? Second phase, didn't win a dual end of the box. We wave our legs on a cross. Don't really do it because we think, oh, we're all right. We're in position. Suddenly, the ball comes across our box. They slot it. In this game, what happened? Ball comes across. We flap, second phase, we lift our legs up, we think we're in position, now we're not in position, we concede. So this is something we've seen before, you know, and the Spurs game, very similar. We didn't quite attack the second phase on the outside, we didn't protect our box. So that's something we've got to get better at. It's not over until it's over. Just because you half cleared it once, you've got to stay focused and just as attentive and aggressive in your man marking and in your desire to stop crosses, you know? So that's something I can say earlier, apart from what you said, really. It's something to watch. And I think Arteta summarized it by said, we just didn't defend our box well enough. That really covers it, yeah. Doesn't it, really?
And Clive, then I'll stay with you for a second since I didn't actually give you a question. The thing that you could see at that point, though, is the psychological impact it had, you know? And I don't like to talk about psychological impact a lot around how it influenced the game, but it couldn't have been more clear. That gave Bayern the confidence that they could go on and win this. We didn't really know how to switch to plan B. And for a few minutes there, we were all at sea. And they started running through us. They had chances. We had last-ditch defensive moments. I think Sané blasted one over from a pretty good position when he could have ended the tie. I think that period of the game is also going to color people's recollection of this game and this tie, because we did look outclassed in that moment. But I don't think it's a reflection of the tie. I think it's a reflection of our inability to switch gears from what felt like managing our way through it to then feeling like we needed to chase and not really knowing how to chase. And I tweeted in that moment, we cannot afford to play the next 25 minutes like they're the last five, which is what it seemed like we were trying to do for a minute. Were you disappointed with our reaction to going behind? Because it felt naive and a bit juvenile in terms of just how we kind of went to pieces structurally.
Again, the last week has really showed me something, that there's been a big desire to win. And sometimes managing that desire is important. And that's why I was impressed with the first half, because I think we did. So again, the Villa game, in some ways, we stretched that game out so much that the desire to win emptied our gas tank. You know, and Munich the same, at 1-0, we desired to win, maybe lost our defensive focus. We probably conceded two goals when we were most on top in the tie. And that, to me, was the tie. You know, our lives were beautiful until that blue goalkeeper shirt appeared in the semicircle in that first leg. You know, and since then, we've been uncertain. You know, so, and I just feel we just needed to keep our focus and just get back to what we were doing. And I loved how we approached his first half. Obviously, we didn't have the quality to make it count. In the second half, we were punch drunk for a little while. We were just a little bit head spinny. And then we got back to it. And Andrew said earlier, we brought on two substitutes that were very successful in the last game against them. And they were unable to have the same impact. You know, and I haven't analysed that enough yet, Elliot, to understand why. I don't think either performances were wonderful, where they were wonderful in the first leg, but I haven't worked out the connections, etc. yet. But that was our plan B, and it didn't work. You know, I think other players were fading to be there, you know, to form the relationships that we needed to form with them, and it just didn't work. And sometimes you just have to accept they were a touch better over the two games. But the regrets I have was the first leg when we were in control and we managed to lose that period when we were in control. That's the regret I have. They didn't lose the periods when they were in control. They won them and were decisive in those moments.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Andrew, thoughts on how we responded, maybe in particular the subs? I think taking off Jorginho in consecutive games just hasn't worked the way you'd like. We took him off for an attacker. I think that actually blunted our attack. We had one shot the rest of the game. A little surprised maybe that Partey was not able to come into this game. Or maybe even a Zinchenko for Tomiyasu early. If you're going to take Jorginho off, get that more progressive player on the left-hand side. You know, I know Zinchenko is extremely polarizing right now, but in that situation where you need that goal, I just felt taking off Jorginho didn't give us a lot of access to the forward players, and so we didn't really create much. What do you think of how we responded and the changes Mikel made to try to turn the game?
I mean, I understand the Jesus and Trossard ones. It was a little bit like the, was it a game against Liverpool in the cup where Jorginho came off and it didn't really work for us in that game either, where I think he's kind of this weird figure in that he's the obvious change to make. If you do want to get an extra attacking player on, but he also brings quite a bit to the way that we play, and therefore you're not quite as progressive when those attacking players come on. I'd need to go back and watch it again. To be honest, I'd need to watch after their goal and watch those last 25 minutes again. And to this point, I haven't really had the gumption to do that.
Because, no interest, none.
Like, what am I going to really understand from this, or what can I use that information for if I do see something? I think Clive made a point earlier about where Jesus was playing. You know, I know ostensibly he was there somewhere in the top end of the pitch, but again, when you talk about structure, you think about structure and how we try and attack. I'm not sure that really worked. He won a free kick. That was about it. Trossard. I think I looked at the stats last night and maybe Jesus had 9, or Jesus had 10, 12 touches, Trossard had 9, something like that. It wasn't a lot. So we didn't get them into the game either. We weren't able to find them. And maybe as much as we want to look at ourselves and think about how these players are fatigued and think about what has been asked of them of late that might have had an influence on what they were able to do in the last 20 minutes of this game, it's quite possible as well that we might need to give some credit to Bayern Munich for the way that they managed that game after going 1-0 up. Like, I think it's perfectly fine to be disappointed that we couldn't react and didn't react and really didn't trouble Neuer in any way. That's a worry, and I think it's fine to be unhappy about that. But I probably think that there are, if you look back at it, things that Bayern did, which basically, with all their experience and their quality and know-how, just made it even more difficult for us. Like it was going to be a set piece or something, you know? And I think as well, in the final stages of the game, we had a couple of like half chances, opportunities even to create a half a chance. And we didn't control our whether it was panic or whatever at that stage, we didn't do it well enough. I'm thinking of the Saka corner, but I'm also thinking of that free kick right outside the box that they took quickly, which, you know, I get if it comes off, it's brilliant, but play the percentages. I think you've got a better chance of scoring a goal if, with people like Martin Odegaard on the pitch, you take that opportunity to take a free kick from the edge of the box, get their wall back, get your big man in there, get it on target, and see what happens, you know? So we didn't quite make the most of the sort of scant opportunities we had to cause Bayern problems. And I'm sure that will be something the manager will address when he speaks to his players again. Like, you know, the free kick from Rice to Trossard where get it in the box. And he dribbled and then made a foul and gave Bayern a free kick. He can't do that. Not at this level. You can't do it.
Obviously, we were denied a couple of corners. That was ridiculous. I don't know. The second one in particular, how's the linesman not see that Neuer's made a save? And Neuer looked like the cat that had caught the pigeon. Like he was just, he's like, really? You're not giving them a corner for that? Okay. I will say this on the, this is the problem with watching from TV on the quickly taken free kick. Andrews, I don't know what your view of that was, but they came back from a replay quickly. And the next thing I know, White is in and he's trying to take a shot. And like, I don't think I got a good view of the pitch and when the kick was taken quickly. It seemed like White was in. It seemed like it maybe was on and maybe White can cut back or slide it across. I don't like the problem is I had such a crap view of it that I can't tell. I don't know. I mean, if you can play a player in behind into the box, you know, versus taking a shot from 20 yards out, direct free kick, which have we scored a direct free kick in the last two seasons? Probably not.
I'm just looking at it here again. I'm looking at that moment here again, and it sort of looks like White is in. Saka takes it quickly, but like there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Bayern men.
But is he in? Like, does he?
No, he's not. It doesn't look like he's really in, and we never got to see like another replay of it.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
But take the free kick. Take the free kick from the edge of the box. You've got left footer in Odegaard, left footer in Saka. There's guys who can hit a ball and get it on target. It's Neuer comes out. Didn't we score a goal against Bayern Munich a few years ago where just sort of lofted in a free kick and it bounced down off Koscielny or somebody just went over the line? You just never know.
Yeah.
And that's why I think in that circumstance, you've got to play the percentage. And I think the percentage would have been to let Bayern get organized, but use the proximity to goal to try and create something.
Clive?
Yeah, I think I pushed myself through a lot of the Bayern press conferences this morning. And Thomas Tuchel was very, very complimentary about Arsenal and where they are, etc. But players were talking about how they didn't want to give away corners because they knew we were good. And so we have the ultimate inverted corner set piece position. If you're a left footer, you said to me, I want to put the ball down anywhere on the pitch for a last minute free kick, curl it into the box. He probably would put it exactly where that free kick was. I think it was Kim Min-jae that made the foul. And he actually put his hands to his head because he knew that was the last thing they should have done. Yeah, he knew. And so they knew they were in trouble. Obviously, we're going to score it. You know the drill, the percentage of a header, etc. But that's the last thing they wanted. And then we gave them exactly what they wanted, and a chance to react and get to a corner, etc., and take the goal-scoring opportunity down. And then the corner comes over. And if you ever want to know that Bukayo Saka's tired, just look at that corner at the last second, because the one thing that guy has is absolute consistency on set pieces and decision making. And his decision making has been elite since the moment he came into the team. And that minute tells me exactly where he is physically and mentally. And it's just a shame, really. That's a lasting memory.
Yeah. I think in terms of the changes, by the way, I don't love them. And I think it is obviously very easy to say, I'm going to take off a midfielder and add an attacker. I don't think that works in most cases. I actually think for really well-organized teams, that makes it easier. I just felt like the game was crying out for, like, if Thomas Partey can play at all, bring him on for Declan Rice. And now you have Jorginho and Partey, and you have a lot of vertical passing. You have a lot of ball progression. You're not going to be as protected, but you're down a goal. You know, or if you want to keep Rice on, then bring him on for Jorginho. And just add that little bit of freshness. I think, you know, you can just bring
Elliot, it's a difficult one to really die on a hill with Thomas Partey, because we don't know where he is, fitness and health-wise. Mm-hmm. And based on what I've seen, you know that when he's top. He hasn't been top since August, right? So he had one Premier League start since August. And so it's a tough one. Elliot, mate, I want you to have a look at the average position of Jesus in this game when he comes on. He is not at centre forward. It's going to upset you. He's literally in centre midfield. So we lost our structure late in the game, which is another reason why the changes didn't really work.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I also think he could have just done Jesus for Kai, right? Like, sometimes I think just you're playing okay, actually. You are. I mean, not after the goal, but like, instead of changing it, freshen it. You know what I mean? Just change the calculus of what the opposition is facing. But I don't know. Look, when it doesn't work, the other thing you could have done will always be proposed as the right thing. that might not have worked either. You know, I mean, that's the problem with saying what you should have done. It's easy to say the thing you did was wrong because the thing you did didn't work. Had it worked, then you'd say it was the right thing, and there's no guarantee the other thing would have worked. So let's get to the end the end of this game, Andrew, and look, it felt meek in the end, and a million people have said this, so we're not actually treading any new ground here, but realistically, it's the first leg is why we're out. When this was 1-0 Arsenal at the Emirates, they looked like they were rocking a bit, and we looked like we felt confident and we were there. And the way we gave them a path back into the tie, that was the original sin. That was a game that was there for us. I really felt we were on top of it. I really felt we could have played just that little bit more carefully at that point and probably gotten another goal. And I don't think this Bayern team was going to beat us by a couple of goals at the Allianz. I mean, they barely beat us by a goal at the Allianz in this leg. So it's easy to get frustrated with how meekly we went out, but you know, the Allianz is not a place people go and win football matches. That's not a thing people do in Europe or anywhere else. It is easy to forget that if you want to look at underlying metrics, Bayern have the best underlying metrics in all of the top five European leagues. Their domestic disappointment belies a very good team with Gnabry and Coman and Sané and Kane and Kimmich, right? I mean, this is a good team. I realize two of those guys weren't there for the return leg. But so is that really what it boils down to? That when we threw away a good position in the first leg and it was level going to the Allianz, this was always going to be a mountain to climb, you know?
It was always going to be touch and go when we did what we did in the first leg. You're always open to this kind of result and this kind of performance. I think it is the first leg. You know, everything was going so well. Saka scored, Ben White. You know, if it's somebody else, if it's a forward who's through there, do they slot that ball home? I would say Jesus, but the ball could have gone anywhere if he'd hit it, you know? But that is a big moment. When you talk about moments in this game or this tie, that felt like a big moment. It's not to, you know, be critical of Ben White, but if we're 2-0 up at that point, you know, what way does it go? And then we make two silly mistakes. And I think perhaps what concerns me anyway is the fact that we made two mistakes for the Bayern goals. We made mistakes for the goals against Villa on Sunday. Mistake maybe is too hard, but there were things we could have done better, that the defensive solidity on which a lot of the success of this team has been based has sort of evaporated a little bit over the last couple of games. And sometimes that can become a bit self-perpetuating or whatever, you know, that it gets in your head that this is now an issue, having not been an issue. But at the same time, you've only lost 1-0 away at Bayern and you can throw it around like that. They are a good team. They've all this experience. Fundamentally, at the heart of it, I still feel disappointed because I think had we played at our best, we were capable of winning this tie, probably by virtue of winning the first leg relatively well and then hanging on in the second leg. Like, so it is disappointing. I'm disappointed, I have to say. I'm sanguine enough and objective enough and long in the tooth enough to be able to recognize that there are things that we could do better and things that we will do better and understand some of the reasons as to why the performance last night wasn't where we needed it to be. But I am sort of regretful about that first leg and mistakes that we made that were uncharacteristic and not really representative of the football that this team had played, even against Porto. You know, the goal that they scored was a worldie. Even if there was a bit of criticism for Raya, it's a brilliant hit, and that's what took to undo us. Whereas it was like Christmas, here's a present and here's another present, and all of a sudden we're 2-1 down. We get back into it, and credit for that, but you can't give two goals away like that and then be surprised when what happens. Like, yeah, we could have gone there and won 1-0 ourselves, but having handed that initiative to them, they didn't really let go of it despite the fact we got that second goal last week.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. There, you know, there's a world where Saka is given the penalty at the end of the first leg. I mean, the margins are so fine. And then we craft narratives around managers and players around these very fine margins. And I, you know, look, Manchester City are out. They went out at home. Barcelona went out at home with a lead in the tie, right? I mean, granted, they went down to 10 men. Madrid were through. Atletico Madrid were through. And then they were out. You know, this competition will absolutely twist you into a pretzel. Clive, there's something I was thinking about. There's going to be a narrative, as there's always narratives around this sort of stuff, but that Mikel's a guy where, you know, he fades at the end of seasons. He bottles at the end of season. You know, 2 seasons ago, it was top four that they let slip. And then last season, it was the title. And this season, it's a title in the Champions League. And that thing occurred to me. There are only two outcomes if you're really good. You win it all or you bottle it. Because you know who isn't bottling it at the end of seasons? Ten Hag's United. Ten Hag's United isn't bottling anything because they're not in it, right? Like, if you're good enough to compete for the very best stuff, but not quite good enough to get over the line, then you are going to finish just shy of it. And then people are going to paint you as this, that, and the other thing. I think we are right there, but we're not all the way there. And so do you right now feel that sort of creeping familiarity with the last few seasons of a season falling short late at the final hurdles? Or do you think that's just lazy logic?
It's, you know, it's a scar that we all carry, isn't it, to the end of seasons. But mine is not super deep, long as we're progressing. And I think the way we progress these seasons is different from last season. You know, my line earlier, I try not to look at the two seasons as the same because they're not. There's the Winter World Cup in last season and we were surprised to be there. So we just played the tune until the tune was done, right? So, and we found out we need to be a bit more physical, a little bit more thought process around our off the ball play. And we've done that and we've secured ourselves defensively. And we had a fantastic 2024 until the last week where we found out a few things. We found out that maybe we lack experience, not so much Champions League experience, but knockout Champions League experience. Because in the group stage, I thought we managed that very, very well. You know, it's like a league, isn't it? So we managed it very, very well. But when it goes knockout, it's a completely different ball game. And I'd forgotten that. I'll be honest with you, I'd forgotten that feeling. And so now my mind is on that and what we need to do. And I can see the team maturing with that. When it comes to the league and what's ahead of us, I see the chat about rotation, but we mentioned a few names there, maybe three or four names. Tomiyasu, Partey, Timber, maybe Zinchenko and Jesus. These are players that I feel, if they were fit and healthy, they would be trusted. Mm-hmm. Right? But if you look at the appearances, the amount of injuries those players have had, they're the ones that were maybe the ones we would have done better rotation with, and they've not been available or consistently in a good place to allow us to rotate the Ben Whites, who literally he's running himself into the ground, you know, and for this team. So I'm loath to get stuck into them because the other options I don't think are good enough. I'll be straight with you. I don't think they're good enough, you know. And so we just have to improve the quality. That's the next phase, improve the quality. A little bit of maybe some left side redesign, offensive redesign, and some, and that's the next phase. And we can all see it now, can't we? We can all see it, and that's a good thing, isn't it? It's a good thing that we know the next step. And this management seem to know it too, and they're prepared to execute on it. They're not going to sit there and just add one player over the summer. That's not going to happen.
I think the scary thing, though, Andrew, is, you know, as we start to wrap up here, like there's sort of an exit interview feeling about the moment right now. People are starting to summarize the season and where we are and what the next steps are and what we can shoot for next season. And like through a weird quirk of the calendar, if we win our next two games, we will be 4 points clear of City at the top of the table before they play again. That's a huge psychological edge. And I think it changes the psychology of the run-in. We play Wolves this weekend. City have an FA Cup tie. Then we play midweek before they play midweek. Mm. So if we go beat Wolves at the end of the weekend, we're top of the table. Again, I understand game in hand, but it just changes the psychology a bit. And so how hard do you think it will be for Mikel, and how important is it for Mikel to not let the team get into summer thinking mode and reflection mode and, you know, disappointment about the season fading away mode and lift them to understand, guys, if you beat Wolves, you're top of the table with five games to play. There cannot be surrender right now. I said at the beginning, there is no time for self-pity. This sense that the season is gone will feel very different if we have 3 points at the end of Saturday and see ourselves at the top of the table. So how challenging do you think it is for Mikel, and by the way, for the fans also, to make sure that we do not give in to the sense that the season is done and we can start thinking about next steps now, you know?
Yeah, look, I'm not here to tell anybody how they should feel or what they should think about where we are or where we're going. And you know, it's been a really, really tough week, you know. We'd be top of the table. We would have been top of the table if we'd beaten Villa. And, you know, I think I wrote about this a little bit during the week where, you know, we as fans are... We carry a lot of scars and we carry a lot of trauma and we carry a lot of difficulties from things that we've experienced in the past, you know, whereas the players don't, and they're going to be disappointed. They're going to be heartbroken. They're going to be shattered about going out of the Champions League because I think they wanted to do really well in the Champions League. But, you know, the reality is that they have to focus one game at a time and they have to try and beat Wolves and they have to then try and beat Chelsea on Tuesday and see what happens from there. You know, but you or I or Clive or anyone sitting there listening to this, I don't think it would be unreasonable to think it's going to be tough now. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough because we saw that in a big game, we've got players out there who can't play at the level that they're capable of playing because I think they have. We've asked a lot of them. We've asked a lot of them, and I think there are consequences for that.
Yeah.
Where you push them and push them and push them, and there's only so far you can push them because they are just humans and everything else. But I think it will be relatively easy for Arteta to say to his players and say to his squad, look, this is what's still here to play for. You know, you've got to bounce back. You've got to beat Wolves. You've got to beat Chelsea. You've got to win the next game and just see what happens. Because at the end of this season, if you can put in that extra bit of effort that gets us those points, you never know. You could be champions by the end of this season. You know, I think it's now down to the team, though, to convince us that they're capable of doing that after the disappointment. And this is another challenge. It's like, not everything goes your way in sport. Not everything goes your way in football. It feels, I know it's very different and times are different and the circumstances are different. Players are different. But it does feel a little akin to where we were after losing to Manchester United in the Invincible season and going out of the Champions League to Chelsea. And all of a sudden, everyone's legs are heavy. Everyone's knackered. And we're 2-1 down to Liverpool on that Good Friday. And maybe this isn't the best example because what we had there was a player or a number of players who had that individual quality to just put the rest of them on their back and do something that would drag you over the line. And that was Thierry Henry that day, scoring that hat-trick. I don't know that we have that player now, but somebody's going to have to step up. Somebody is going to have to step up and do something in these final games if we are to keep going in this title race, which I obviously hope we will. Because like you say, it could be, who knows what the Manchester City exit in the Champions League might do to them. You just never know. So we have to make it difficult for them. But I think Arteta is going to have to think quite carefully about his team for Saturday night. That's all I'll say. I think, you know, putting the same guys out there and hoping for different evil, even though it's Wolves, probably isn't the way to go. So I'm really curious as to see what he does with his team for this weekend.
Yeah, that's all really well said. And like, I'm scared of one thing. I tend to be a worrier in case I haven't mentioned that. Guys, like, this feels like it's on a bit of a knife edge. Because if we win all our remaining games, that will mean we've beaten Chelsea, Tottenham away, and United away. That is going to be such a huge lift to the end of the season and erase a lot of the pain we've just experienced. And even if we fall just short of the title, I think we will end on a really nice high, feeling that we've taken a step forward, we've beat City this season. We beat Liverpool this season. We beat Spurs. We beat Chelsea. We beat United. Like, we're going to feel pretty good. But the alternate option, if we don't beat Chelsea, if we lose at Tottenham, if we lose at United and finish 6-7 points off the title, with those being the memories and the exit to Bayern, I think so much of the good work and progress we've made is going to feel like it doesn't even exist. And so this cannot be a run-in where we just approach it like season done now, because I think there's a lot in terms of the ability for the project to continue forward, Project Arteta, to continue forward in a positive way. These next six games are going to determine it. We win them all, win those big games, take the title to the final day, Project Arteta is going to feel real good. We lose a couple of those big games and fall away, I think there will be a lot of people asking questions that probably aren't deserved but are still going to be asked. So, Clive, do you see it as that pivotal? I can't help it. I think this six games, which people right now are sort of almost writing off as perfunctory at this point, I think they're going to go a long way to determining the mindset of the club and the fans in the summer.
Now, what you said earlier about refocusing on what's ahead of us, I thought was really, really good. And that's what I'm trying to do. And, you know, we've got a lot to play for. Sometimes let's not beat ourselves with a weak mentality as fans, as watchers, and make out that this is all gone. Because you never know what happens in football. Watching Bernardo Silva take a penalty last night, none of us saw that one coming, did we? Chip it into goalkeeper's hands. If you're not in the room, you can't put people under pressure. Stay in the room. Win your games and see what they've got. And suddenly we might be talking about a Man City rebuild, because they're in a little mini transition of their own. Kevin De Bruyne's number's not looking so great all of a sudden, and he didn't play till January. Nardo's looking at Barcelona. You know, these things change very, very quickly. You've got to stay in the room to keep people under pressure, to see what they've got, to see if their edges could be frayed. Liverpool are struggling at the moment, but they're getting their players back. One big win, they're going to feel confident again, and they're not too far away. You've got to refocus, throw it away, stay in the room, get those points on Saturday night, which is going to be tough. But, you know, Wolves just drew Nottingham Forest, right? It's going to be tough, but we're not talking Bayern Munich here, right? We have to refocus and reestablish our quality over these teams. Chelsea will take care of itself, right? And then Spurs will back off their beach for the weekend game. So it's going to be three massive games. But if we come out the other side of that, mate, I promise you the world will look different, massively different. But your point is valid. We are on the edge. Let's be honest. It doesn't take much to put us on the edge, does it? One draw, and we're having each other, aren't we, really? Let's be honest. So that's just the nature of football fandom.
I'm like Bane. You've only adapted to the edge. I was born and raised by Look, it is easy when you have a painful Champions League exit at this time of the season, mid-April, six games to go, to feel that season over. I'm simply saying, when you look at the fixtures that are upcoming and the chance to be top of the table with five games left to play at the end of the weekend, no one can afford to think that way. Mikel is going to get a great test of the character of the team in doing this. And there'll be plenty of time in the summer to say, we need another forward, we need another eight, you know, here's what we need. I don't think anybody can afford to think that way. And I will be very curious to see who Mikel thinks he can trust on Saturday to go deliver for him. Can he keep just picking the same guys? I don't know. There's certainly a question to be asked about the squad he's built and the players he doesn't trust. You know, where's Reece Nelson? Where's Smith Rowe? Where's Vieira? Eddie Nketiah coming on to 86 minutes. Thomas Partey can't play. Zinchenko wasn't trusted. Kivior has completely fallen away. It feels like a very small squad, despite the fact that it is 100% fit, Timber aside. So we'll just have to see who he picks. I think we can leave it there. I think that's plenty for this. Andrew, did you have a final thought there?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't.
Just addressing the microphone, so I wanted to make
sure
I was just cutting you off. Getting ready to say your goodbyes and be done talking about Arsenal for the day, which is fair enough. Okay, we'll leave it there. Andrew's on Twitter, and well, Andrew's just on Arsblog. That's basically the thing. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Elliot.
Are you prepared for me to come to Dublin, drink a Guinness?
Yeah. I've got a nice welcome plan for you. Don't worry.
Okay.
That sounds a lot more sinister than it actually is.
It did sound sinister. In less sinister news, I do want to thank you, by the way, for how supportive you've been about the fundraiser and for your own philanthropy. I know you've given all of your Patreon money for the month to charity, so it's wonderful. And yeah, thanks for that. Really appreciate it.
Not at all. And it's an amazing thing. And you know, every year the generosity and the decency of the communities that we are lucky enough to be part of really comes to the fore. So, you know, to anyone who's listening or watching who's contributed in any way to all of this, thank you very much. You're brilliant.
Yeah. And with any luck, we'll have an announcement to make shortly. So there's that. Give to the fundraiser if you can. Last week to do so. We'll pick the ticket soon. You know, that Bournemouth game is still going to have a lot riding on it. And as someone who went to the home Bournemouth game last season, they tend to be memorable, is what I would say. So you'll want to get into that. Clive's on Twitter, Clive PFC. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you very much.
We'll be debuting Clive's concept called The Recap tomorrow. I'm very curious to see what it's like. I have no involvement in it whatsoever. It's entirely Clive's doing. Also, by the way, Phil Costa's got a new podcast out on the Red Bull RB Leipzig model and multi-club ownership. Really, really interesting conversation if you want to check out the Football Vision Pod. So that's enough of that for today. Hang in there, everybody. And please try to remember, we can go top of the table on Saturday. If you're in the Chicago area and want to see us, we'll be there, Chicago, on Saturday. Check it out. My name is Alex Pithick, Black Man's Red Gunner. We love you, and we'll talk after Arsenal 10 Wolves.